From KCUR, this is Up to Date with Steve Kraske. I'm producer Elizabeth Ruiz. Getting aid to the Gaza Strip has been slow and a challenge for humanitarian aid workers. Limited border crossings, stringent guidelines on accepted aid, and safety concerns for relief workers are hindering efforts to get supplies to the nearly 2 million people who have been displaced. On April 1st, seven World Central Kitchen aid workers were killed by an Israeli airstrike. And since the war in Gaza began, it's estimated over 200 aid workers have been killed. Today, Steve is joined by Dan Neal, Vice President of Operations at Heart to Heart International, and their Director of Disaster Response, J.P. Fisher, to discuss the unique challenges of getting aid to those affected by the war in Gaza and how the Lenexa-based nonprofit is helping provide relief.
Well, J.P., seven workers were killed recently while providing aid work in Gaza. Although Heart to Heart does not have personnel on the ground over there, can you describe the dangers that humanitarian aid workers are under when they go into conflict areas these days?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So as we're seeing in Gaza, it's very similar to many conflicts around the world, including Ukraine. As aid workers, we go in, we coordinate with the government. We use clearly marked vehicles. We coordinate with other actors and all of those local stakeholders. So it can be really challenging in these conflict settings to really gain humanitarian access.
But even if you do everything right, as we're finding out in Gaza, apparently things can still go terribly wrong.
Correct.
And that puts enormous pressure on you guys, doesn't it, in some ways?
It does. And humanitarian organizations, some are deciding to pause operations. And this is sort of coming from their field staff saying, hey, if you can't guarantee our safety and we aren't able to be safe while delivering aid, then we can't achieve that humanitarian mission.
How much concern are you getting from your own workers around the world in the wake of what happened in Gaza?
A lot. This is really shaking up the entire humanitarian sector. World Central Kitchen is a very established sort of NGO that we've worked with or coordinated with in the Bahamas during Hurricane Dorian, previous responses. So a lot of the colleagues that were unfortunately killed are close connections within the humanitarian community.
You know, I didn't realize until our producer, Elizabeth Ruiz, pointed this out to me that we had these deaths in Gaza, but we've also had reports that now estimate that up to 200 aid workers have been killed in recent months. That number surprised me. I guess it's going to surprise many of our listeners. Are you surprised by it?
Yes, definitely. So right now, Gaza is one of the most dangerous places in the world to be an aid worker. And to sort of put it in perspective, in Gaza, there have been more aid workers killed than by any other army, militia, terrorists, than any other war in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really an extremely dangerous place to be an aid worker.
Dan, what are your concerns as you hear this conversation roll out about the concerns that so many relief workers are facing these days?
Yeah, so it puts a tremendous strain on organizations who are responding, definitely at the field level where those workers are needing to get up every morning and go out and do their jobs, whether it's delivering food, providing medical care, you know, whatever their role is in that area. But it also puts a strain back on the headquarters organizations as folks like me back at, you know, the headquarters are thinking about how do we keep these folks safe. Our coordination efforts with local government entities, you know, you think about all, you know, contacting families of deceased or injured folks. So it puts an incredible amount of pressure on the organization from top to bottom.
I was going to say in the intro, I pointed out that Heart to Heart does not have relief workers over in Gaza. But if you did right now, Dan, would you feel comfortable keeping them there?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know that Heart to Heart's made a decision not to enter into conflict areas because we don't feel like we have the right type of apparatus at the headquarters level all the way down to the field level where we could really be able to provide our staff with the confidence that we'd be able to keep them safe. So that's fortunately for us at the moment is not something that we've had to wrestle with, but we know we've got friends and colleagues at other organizations who do have people who are impacted every day, and I'm sure it's keeping them up all hours of the night.
I was going to say, what levels of concern are you hearing from your colleagues and other relief organizations right now? It must be through the roof.
Absolutely. It's incredibly stressful. And that's why some of the organizations we work with have gone ahead and paused their operations in Gaza, because they've been coordinating their activities. They've been doing everything they're supposed to be doing, and their workers are still getting killed. And so they just have had to put some things on hold.
Hmm. So heart-to-heart doesn't go into conflict zones, you just said. Where does it go? Just clarify that for us.
Yeah, so we send aid everywhere. So we're sending shipments into Gaza right now.
But not workers themselves.
But not individuals, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the distinction we make. Occasionally, we will send someone into, like I was in Ukraine a couple years ago, right after the war began there, to do some assessment, to meet some people. But typically, we don't send folks in. A lot of our medical teams are volunteers. They're not paid staff. And so we take some extra cautionary measures because all our medical teams are volunteer-based.
So, JP, as you look at the landscape here, just how dangerous is this work? What would you tell our listeners about that?
Extremely dangerous, especially in conflict settings.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're hearing this word deconfliction be thrown around a lot and all.
Deconfliction?
Correct. So
that's
this
a
is,
new one on me.
Yeah. So this is during a war after the occupying force, as they're sort of moving through, those areas are cleared, which basically permits civilians to move freely and then aid workers to move freely. And that's been one of the challenges, that deconfliction zone is defined differently by different stakeholders.
Wow. Well, Dan, while your organization is not on the ground, you work with those organizations that are there. Have any of your partner organizations suffered any deaths or injuries in the wake of the conflict in Gaza?
Yeah, so there's two organizations that we have a lot of close contact with. One is called ANERA. And it's Americans for Near East Relief Association, I believe is what the acronym stands for. And we've worked closely with them both in Gaza and in Lebanon. And I know they've had at least one aid worker killed. And then our other organization that we work closely with is based out of Washington, D.C. It's called Project Hope. Worked with them for many, many years in many different contexts around the world. And they have also had a worker killed in, I think, a medical doctor.
Yeah,
from one of their health teams in Gaza that was killed. So while we're not directly there, it is striking pretty close to home.
Well, JP, going back to what happened in Gaza on April 1st when the seven World Central Kitchen aid workers were killed, maybe you don't have the answer to this, but Israel's claiming that they made a mistake when firing on those workers. Do you know anything more about how these aid workers are supposed to move safely and ensure that they're not targeted, or what happened over there?
Yeah, so in all sort of emergency situations or conflict, it is, like, as a humanitarian organization, we coordinate directly with the government, also with our local partners there. And we do that through attending coordination cells, letting them know our movements. I've been a part of many aid convoys, and that's where you have to notify not only the national government, but whoever that local government is. We're also traveling in clearly marked vehicles. So that is key, so people understand that these are aid workers. A lot of times, to ensure our safety, those are armored vehicles. So it's really good to make the distinction that this is a humanitarian aid vehicle. But it's all about, it's called acceptance. So the acceptance strategy within safety and security is really getting that community buy-in, that we're aid workers, we're here to help, we have that acceptance within the community.
And heart-to-heart doesn't go in unless you have that acceptance, is what I'm hearing here today.
Correct. So not only in conflict settings, this applies to all disasters. So hurricane, earthquake, it's all about getting those local connections so our field teams are safe.
Even then, how nerve-wracking is this work? Do you feel like you're a target, even under the best of circumstances?
It depends on the context. So I say in Yemen, South Sudan, and especially now in Gaza, absolutely. And that's why there's been a big push within the sector. If you see on social media, there's a hashtag not a target, which has been a big push from the UN and other aid organizations to really highlight that fact that aid workers need to be safe in order to conduct the essential work.
Dan, let's go back over to the situation in Gaza that so many of our listeners are concerned about. There's been well over 1 million people displaced there. How dire is that situation from your point of view, and what do we know? What do you know about that?
Yeah, so I'd love to give the listeners here a little bit of context. Just so Gaza is just slightly smaller than Wyandotte County from a geography perspective.
Wow.
But Gaza's population is about 2.3 million people, which is the same as the Kansas City metro area. If you take all 14 counties in Kansas City that make up the greater metropolitan area, there's about 2.3 million people that live in there.
Right.
And so if you take all 2.3 million people and you put them all in Wyandotte County,
yeah,
that's the situation that we're talking about. And
that's a great analogy.
Before,
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's before the war began. And so now, now that the war has started, you've got about 75% of that population. So if you think the population of Kansas City, all living in Wyandotte County, and you take 75% of them and you put them in the area of approximately where 635 goes through Wyandotte County to the Missouri state line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's now the population density of 1.7 million people living in that area. Since the war started, that's the situation. And then you imagine that there's a fence all the way around Wyandotte County, and none of those people can leave, and there's a war going on. So that's the context that we're looking at as far as the situation in Gaza.
And what kind of challenge, particular challenge, does that present to the aid organizations who are on the ground there? I know they're bringing in supplies from heart to heart, but what kind of challenges does that scenario pose?
Well, there's a whole numerous level of number of challenges. So if you think about healthcare for that many people in Kansas City, we've got, I don't know, dozens of hospitals. So you think about healthcare in that area, many, many of the hospitals are damaged, destroyed, not operating or not operating at at their needed capacity. You think about education for school children. So for the war's been going on now 6 months, none of the children are in school. The schools are being used to house people who can no longer live in their homes because the homes have been destroyed. There's very, very little business activity going on. So the population is really dependent on importation of aid. And this is not just food and medicine. It's all supplies for life. In particular, Heart to Heart has been focused on providing hygiene items, and in particular, menstrual hygiene items, as there are an estimated 700,000 women and girls of menstruating age who do not have access to basic menstrual hygiene products. And that's an issue that we're trying to address.
I also want to point out that these products, that's not something that listeners can donate to Heart to Heart to have you ship over there, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, we are working with the United Nations Population Fund, the UNFPA, and they have some guidelines and standards around the types of items that they will accept. And this is not just unique for Gaza. This is a worldwide policy that they have. And so we've been purchasing a very particular quantity and brand of menstrual hygiene items and packaging those up. They have to be packaged in a very particular way to meet the security challenges that we face in getting them across the border into Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a number of logistical hurdles to getting the items into Gaza, and it's just simpler if we're able to purchase everything and have them packaged in uniform quantities.
Those logistical challenges, are they unusual in some ways?
Yeah, they are.
Given the conflict there?
So Gaza does not have an airport or a seaport for regular commerce. And so many of the countries that we respond to, they have their own airport, they have their own seaport, and you can ship right in. In Gaza, you have to go through one or two other countries in order to get things into Gaza in the first place.
And which countries are those?
So you can ship things in through Egypt, and then they would go up to the border crossing. Israel controls the border crossing into Gaza, so you have to clear Egyptians' customs, you have to clear Israeli customs,
wow,
and then you have to clear customs into Gaza, which the government of Gaza is Hamas, which, you know, has been declared a terrorist organization, but they're still exercising bureaucratic authority over importation. So you've got three different governments, so to speak, that you have to clear customs on.
And that just slows things down, I'm sure.
It's dramatically slower than many other situations that we find around the world.
Heart to Heart has already sent in, what, 100 pallets of supplies to the region there. Can I ask, what are you sending and where is it going?
So we are focused on sending personal hygiene items, so things like soap, shampoo, washcloths, fingernail clippers, really basic stuff, and menstrual hygiene products.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the items we're sending. We're working on sending 240 pallets of that product over the next 8 weeks or so. We've got 50 pallets in motion right now, and we will soon have an additional 50 on their way as well. Those items, we're actually sending them through the country of Jordan. They're flying into Jordan, and then they'll go by convoy from Jordan across Israel and then into Gaza. So it's quite the complicated supply chain.
You know, before I forget to ask the basic question, you know, if people listening, Kansas City area folks want to help here in some ways, Dan, what's the most effective way for them to pitch in here?
So we would really welcome financial donations for this response.
Money's the way to go.
Absolutely. The costs to move these items into Gaza are quite substantial. We are getting some donated freight provided through some donors that we have, but there's costs beyond that, just moving trucks around from Jordan into Israel into Gaza. It's quite expensive. And so financial donations would be wonderful.
You're also sending aid to Lebanon as well, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, we have been sending some aid there. Lebanon has also been impacted by this conflict. The Hezbollah rebels in Lebanon are, you know, firing rockets into Israel, and Israel is firing back. And so there are casualties on both sides. Heart to Heart has also responded to Israel directly, both with hygiene kits and financially to a community that was impacted directly by the October 7th attack. So we're a neutral party. We are trying to help people who have a need, regardless of where they are, regardless of what their politics are. And that's been our mission since day one, and that's what we're continuing to try to do.
Stay with us. This conversation continues in just a moment.
Dan, one more thing here. You're not just aiding the crisis in Gaza. We spoke to you a while back while you were in Ukraine coordinating efforts there. Are you still providing support on that front?
We are. In fact, we had a shipment of medicines go to Ukraine just yesterday. Left our warehouse, and it's on its way to Ukraine. It'll be there in about a week. And so we've been continuing to support Ukraine throughout the last 2 years. Absolutely.
JP, what does that support to Ukraine look like as the war now has spanned, you know, some 2 years?
Yeah, so to date, we've provided nearly 200 million worth of aid. So that's medical supplies, medicine.
$200 million or pieces?
Dollars.
Dollars.
Dollars worth of aid. So that includes medicine, so pharmaceuticals.
But $200 million just from Heart to Heart?
Correct, yes.
$200 million? That's mm-hmm. a staggering number. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I just am taken back by it. Go ahead. Don't let my astonishment stop you from talking. Yeah.
No yeah. problem. So what's yeah. included in that is pharmaceutical supplies, trauma-related first aid kits, personal protection equipment, and then also hygiene kits. So in Ukraine, we've done nearly 187,000 hygiene kits. And then we've also provided 16 portable container clinics. So what these are think of a shipping container.
We talked about that with Dan the last time. Yeah, tell us, our listeners, what those, it's amazing what these things are.
Yeah, so imagine a normal shipping container. There's different sort of organizations that specialize in coming in and basically retrofitting them to be an actual clinic room. And they have different, it can be an OBGYN focus, it can be just a primary care focused room. But we have 16 of those located throughout Ukraine, some right near the front line and others supporting populations throughout the country. And these are managed by our local partners and the local hospital system in Ukraine.
And just to be clear, Heart to Heart is raising dollars in amounts of tens of millions, a couple hundred million dollars in this case, going into Ukraine. Dan, help me. Where's that money coming from?
So in the case of Ukraine, the dollar amounts there, these are donated pharmaceuticals. So pharmaceutical companies across the United States donate medicines to Heart to Heart, and then we apply a dollar value to those items as a gift in kind. They do have a value. And so the $200 million that JP is referring to is of donated pharmaceuticals. So we wish we had the $200 million worth of cash. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
That's our budget. Our annual budget is around $10 million a year.
I was going to say, yeah.
From a cash standpoint. But these goods have a value, and we ship them around the world.
So. Is that amount of money going to one country in conflict? Is that an unusual number? Is that unusually high? Or I'm still reacting to the amount of money. That's an incredible amount of money.
Yeah, so Ukraine is a little bit of an interesting case because the population there is quite large as compared to some of the other countries that we respond to. They have a very advanced healthcare system, and so there's a lot of doctors and nurses and medical system that's available, you know, that's set up. The war in Ukraine has impacted their ability to manufacture pharmaceuticals as they were doing prior to the war, and or import pharmaceuticals.
Yeah,
and so we have just been helping them offset what they would have normally been able to produce on their own, and so that's why there's a tremendous amount of demand there for donated items at this point in time.
JP, how long on average does Heart to Heart continue to support a crisis or a war that's going on? How long will that support last?
I'll say this for everything, but it really depends on the context and on the disaster. So in Ukraine, we're seeing that this lasts multiple years. It might be the same in Gaza, where we're still waiting to see. But our support really varies. For example, in the Bahamas after Hurricane Dorian, we had a medical team there that was there for 3 months providing direct patient care. In that case, we needed to be there for 3 months. And other responses, for example, in Maui after the wildfires, that's where we sort of manage that remotely, where we're sending another one of those container clinics and then also other supplies.
Yeah. Dan, are there more conflicts in the world today than there typically are? Can you give me a broader sense, not only just of war, but of, you know, wildfire aftermath, that kind of thing? I mean, am I asking too hard of a question there?
So we do know that there are more refugees on the move around the world today than there have been in the past, since World War II. So if you take the war in Syria, the wars in Ukraine, Gaza, there's conflict in many Central African countries.
Yeah.
If you add all those together, you have more people on the move out of their home country than you have had since World War II. So in that sense, yes, there's a lot more need in the world. And if you combine that with the climate impacts of climate change causing hurricanes to be stronger, more rainfall, so you've got more flooding.
Right.
And then you've got other situations where there's, you know, drought in a more extreme way that's causing wildfires, as we've seen in the western United States and just last fall in Hawaii and Maui. Yes, there's more extremes happening around the world for sure.
Well, that's Dan Neal. He's Vice President of Operations at Lenexa-based Heart to Heart International. He was joined by J.P. Fisher, the Director of Disaster Response. Again, if people want to make a donation, how can they do it?
We would welcome you to go to hearttoheart.org. And you can find a number of causes that you can support there or just support us generally.
That was our host, Steve Kraske, speaking with Dan Neal and J.P. Fisher from the Lenexa-based nonprofit Heart to Heart International. Up to Date is a production of KCUR, and this segment was produced by me, Elizabeth Ruiz. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.